To talk about the many-body invariance of the electric multipoles in the condensed matter systems. And this presentation is based on the work that I worked with the Ken Shirazaki at Kyoto University and Byungmin Kang at KIOS. And actually, there was a parallel paper from Taylor Hughes' group. And when they overlap, they agree each other. And actually, the both papers are independent, but somehow they have almost the same logics. Anyway, let me go on. So the goal of today's talk is to find the definitions of the electric multipoles in the solid systems. And this electric multipoles is nothing but the familiar object from your undergrad electromagnetism class, where you have dipoles where the minus charge and plus charge are displaced in the real space. And the quadrupole is the system where you have minus, plus, plus, minus, which are separated in a way that gives you the no, zero dipole, but there are some particular field lines. So this is the plan for today's talk. So we are going to first start with a brief introductions about the multipoles. Essentially, we are asking, why do you want to care about the electric multipoles? And second, we are going to move to the multipoles in the crystals, which is mainly about the papers. And I will finish by conclusions and outlooks. So let's start with introductions. So, so the object we are going to deal with is multipoles. And this object is actually something you are pretty familiar with from your undergraduate educations. For example, in the classical multipoles, where you learned from the electrodynamics class, the input you have is the charge distribution in the open space, which is low r. And the output you typically calculate in your exam or homework is to compute the multipoles, like dipoles is just integral of the charge distributions in space. And also share with the electric field line, which is given by the dipoles. And actually, this is not the only multipoles in the systems. And actually, there is a well-defined way to compute the multipole moments, which you can find from Expedia. Like the dipole is the summing over the charge and position. And the quadrupole is the charge times some tensorial vector, tensorial quantities out of the positions. And from these, you can calculate the potentials in the space, which is like 1 over r, which is given by the total charge, and 1 over r cubic, which is polarizations, and r to the fifth, which is the quadrupolar. For example, this case is the quadrupolar case, where you have minus q plus q plus q, and these are the field lines. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is that classical multipoles seem to be almost done, and there is nothing to be learned. So you can ask from this, why do I still care about the electron multipoles, okay? By the way, this is really heavy. So what we want to do is to find the multipoles in the crystals at the low temperatures. And when you discuss the crystals at the low temperatures, you immediately see there are two difficulties. First one is the quantum mechanical electrons, which may be highly correlated to each other by the Coulomb interaction. And the second is the lattice, meaning that you have a certain periodicities in the real space. And these two are the difficulties that arises if you want to define the multipoles in the crystals. The bad thing is that it makes the defining multipole non-trivial, but there is also good points from these, which actually gives you the link to the topological band insulators. Okay, so let's start with the review about this dipolar case first. So let's start with the dipole. And then let's say I have a crystal, which I have a lattice translation. So these blue dots are the position of ions. And let's say red is the position of electrons. And in this system, you have a unit translations, which gives you the same positions of the ions. And from these, you can try to define the dipole moment, which is Px. And classically, you want to define it as x to x times the charge at the position x. So if you want to define it as quantum object, the first trial you can try to do is perhaps promote this as the expectation value of the wave functions. But actually, it's not this simple. The reason is that if you want to define the position of electron, you see there are ambiguity. So for example, let's take an electron here. And when you try to define the position x, there are multiple different choices. because all the ions are the same. So for example, this X can mean this one, but it should be equivalent if you choose this ion, because this ion and that ion are equivalent. So there are some multiple different choices of X when you try to define the polarizations. So it makes the defining the dipole as a macroscopic quantity increase difficult. But actually, the right answer, the correct answer, turns out to be in the momentum space. So in the momentum space, when you have a crystal symmetries, the translation symmetry, you can go to the momentum space, which is nothing but just Brillouin zone, where k takes from minus pi to pi. And from that, you can solve some tight binding model, where you have bands, which are the empty bands and the filled bands and so on. And the wave function in real space is given by the plane wave components with some oscillations, which is block functions. And from these block functions, you can actually compute the polarization. And the proper definition of polarization turns out to be e to exponential 2 pi I px is given by e to the integral over ak, which is Bay connection or gauge field defined in the momentum space, which can be written in terms of the field states of the block wave functions. So when you see this, you immediately notice a few points. So first of all, the polarization defined in this way is defined up to mode 1. The reason is that if you shift px by plus 1, then e to the, you get e to the 2 pi I, which is nothing but 1. So the polarization in this way is defined up to mode 1. And it is associated with the fact that the position of electron is ambiguous by up to unit translations, which is just shifting position x by 1. And this is symmetry independent conditions. And if you impose the symmetry, there can be much more interesting scenarios. So if you have a symmetry like reflections, which maps x to the minus x, then that maps px, the polarization, which is vector quantity, goes to minus px. But those are defined up to the mode 1. So you get the px to be 0 or half mode 1. And you are having only the discrete values. So what's special about these discrete values is that when you have a half, this half cannot be changed arbitrarily, even if you deform the Hamiltonian, because it can take only discrete values. And it's also shared with the symmetry protected topologies, which is known as the relevant topologies for the like Schuster-Per-Hegel chain. Okay, and this is kind of like building blocks for the other topological insulators, like the quorum Hall states, or which is nothing but pumping over the Schuster-Per-Hegel chain, and the like topological band insulators, and so on. So another thing is that these polarizations is truly the physical object in the sense that, let's say I have an insulator which has polarization to be non-zero. And then let me have a vacuum. Let me have a boundary to the vacuum. And then let's say I measure the local charge here and here. Then those local charge, you can actually calculate from your tight binding models, is constant with the polarizations in the sense that the classical electromagnetism tells you that when you have a constant polarizations, there is a boundary charge. And that's given by P dot n. And that's constantly coming out with the lattice models. So the polarizations that's defined by the value phase quantity like this is physical quantity. Okay. So far it's very nice that we have proper definitions for the polarization in the crystal, which actually you can find from your textbook. But what you probably didn't appreciate much is that that expression, if you try to translate in terms of real space, then it's not actually very clear, because the quantity you define is the integral over the momentum space. So it's not very clear how to write it in terms of the real space formula. And the second thing is that it's written for the band insulators. So it's not very clear how to apply that formula for the interacting electrons. Okay? So these two difficulties are actually overcome by Restas' paper, which provide the many-body real space formula for the dipole. So in his definitions, what he considered is he considered some object, the unitary operator, acting on the many-body ground state, which is nothing but summing over the positions times number. And what he considered is that he prepared a generic many body ground state in the circle with a periodic boundary conditions of the size L. Okay, so this is the many body ground state. For example, if you have a band insulator, it's a state where all the bands below the zero energy is filled up. And then if you take the expectation values, then he defines its phase part gives you the polarizations. Okay, and what you can further show is that if this ground state is band insulator, then this one becomes that integral by explicitly computing these expectations. Okay, so this seems to be a feasible definition of the polarizations for any ground state in the one any ground state. So for the polarizations, what you can see is that there are three different definitions. One is the many body invariance, which you can play from the Ressa's formula, which it turns out to be the same as the band index when you have a band insulator. And they are constant with the edge charge, which you can measure from your numerical calculations. And they are all agree each other. Okay. So for the polarization case, it seems like we have very well defined quantity for the insulators. Any questions? So far, those are more like the textbook things, right? So. And there has been recent progress about the multipoles. So this paper by Taylor Hughes and his collaborators actually found the insulators, which are characterized not by polarizations, but actually by the quadrupoles and the octopoles, okay? So in the sense that you have some insulators where the polarizations are zero, but there you can define the quadrupole moment, which is non-zero, that's first, and second, it's quantized by mode one. So we are familiar with the concept that the polarization can be quantized mode one, but they claim further that quadrupole moment can be quantized up to mode one, okay? And they also found the three-dimensional model where the polarizations are zero and quadrupole moments are zero, but the octopolar moment is non-zero and again mode one. Okay, that's their claim. And before getting into more details, I would like to say that what they found is actually some part of so-called high-order topological insulators, which people recently discussed, like the Taylor Hughes paper and other groups' paper and many others. And let me skim through. Let me go through the simplest phenomenologies of the high-order topologies. So the topological band insulator we are familiar with is that the system where the bulk is gapped. But you have something gapless if you go to the boundary, right? For example, in the 2D, we have like cornhole effects where the bulk is gapped. But if you go to the boundary, then there is one-dimensional gapless mode. That's something we are familiar with. And the higher order topological insulators is the state where whose non-trivial topology appears only at the corners or hinges or maybe boundaries. So for example, the phase in the 2D is the phase where the bulk is gapped and the one-dimensional boundary is also gapped. But when you have the corner, then there is something non-trivial. Okay, that's the simplest non-trivial high-order topological insulators in 2D. And in 3D, you can play the similar things. For example, the 3D topological band insulator we are familiar with is bulk is gapped, but the boundary you have with Dirac fermions. And there is a phase, which is hinge state, where the bulk is gapped and the boundary is gapped. But at the hinge, you have some gapless 1D modes. And there is another model in the 3D where the bulk is gapped, hinge is gapped, but the corner supports something. Okay, so these are the simplest non-trivial high-order topological insulators. And today we are going to focus on only the two primary high-order topological insulators. One is the quadrupolar insulator, and the other is octopolar insulators, where they suggest these are identified by quadrupole moment and octopole moment. So essentially, this paper found the insulator models with a quantized discrete electric multipoles, where the quadrupole moment is mode one up to half, and the octopolar moment is half mode one, which are the symmetry protected band indices. which is given by the nested reasoners. Okay, these are the main claims, but I didn't show how they figured this out. So let me get into a little bit more details about that. So for example, let's concentrate on the 2D example, which is the quadrupolar moment. And in these systems, they discuss the symmetries like the C4 or the two mirrors. And they wrote down the type binding model. And this is the single unit cell where you have four orbitals. Okay, four orbitals, and they are spinless. And there are hopping parameters, which are the intra-unit cell, and then there are inter-unit cell hoppings. Okay, and in certain parameter regimes of the hopping parameters, you have a bulk spectrum, which is gapped, meaning that it's insulator, and it's half-filled. And in these systems, if you have open boundary conditions, then they can show that at the corners, you have a corner charge plus half and the minus half. This is the real space configurations. And you see it's like plus half and minus half. It seems like quadrupolar configuration, right? But to make sure it's really the quadrupolar moment, they go further. So if you look at these open boundary conditions, you see that there are like intra-unit cell hopping and inter-site unit cell hoppings and so on. And if you see this pattern, and in the regime that you are in this non-trivial insulator phase, where the inter-unit cell hopping is bigger than that. So if you look at this edge, then you see this is nothing but Schur-Schur-Perheger chain model, right? Which supports the polarization to be half. So they found an insulator where the edge polarization is half and the corner charge is half. And this phenomenology is actually constant with the classical configuration of the quadrupole moment, half per unit cell. And when you have this kind of density in the bulk, and when you have a boundary, then you can compute the boundary polarization out of that, which is n dot q, and the corner charge is like n dot q dot n, something like that. So it's like the semi-classical understanding of polarizations. When you have polarizations, you see there should be some boundary charge, which it comes from p dot n. And they generalize that argument for the quadrupole moment, where they compute the boundary polarization, which is constant with these phenomenologies. OK? So any questions? So given these, they try to find the bulk band indices, which is given by the nested Wilson-Loeb approach. Which is the way I understand this is that they are trying to capturing the boundary polarization from the bulk band systems. So what they considered is that they consider the momentum space, and then you define the Wilson line along the momentum cut, and investigate the polarization of the this Hamiltonian, something like Hamiltonian for this Wilson line operator, because Wilson line operator is unitary. So you can find the Hermitian object, which gives you this object. And then if you investigate the polarization of this, then they suggest this should be the correct object to look for the quadrupole moment in the bulk. And the background reasoning is that this Hamiltonian appearing in the Wilson line object is known to be adiabatically equivalent to the physical edge boundary Hamiltonian. And that directly implies that the polarization of this, the Wilson line Hamiltonian, is the same as the polarization of the edge Hamiltonian when you have a quantizing quantizing symmetries like C4 or mirror. Okay? So if you want to learn about polarization of the physical boundaries, you can simply learn from the Wilson line operators. But what you quickly notice is that when you do not have these symmetries, which quantize the polarization, you see this is not guaranteed, OK? So what you find is that nested Wilson loop is not a generic measure for the quadrupole moment, but it works only for the quantized quadrupole moment. So for example, when the symmetries are relaxed, you can actually compare the nested Wilson loop values of the quadrupole moment and the physical quadrupole moment, which are the purple ones. And you see they disagree. right? Generically, they disagree. So these blue dots are the quadrupole moment you can deduce from the nested Wilson loop. And the purple one is the physical quadrupole moment, and they disagree. And they agree only when you have a quantizing symmetry where you have a quadrupole moment 0 or 0.5 or 1.
So how do you define physical quadrupole moment?
That's by deduce from the open boundary conditions. So you solve open boundary condition and then compute the polarizations. Yeah. So what you find is that the nested-Wilson loop approach is a very successful band index, but not a measure for the quadrupole moment. Okay, so in summary, what these guys found is that there are insulators with quantized multiples, and they deduce the symmetric protective band indices, and they can diagnose these phases, but actually these are not the generic measure for the multiples. But if you remember, the multiples are the physical quantity, which does not require the symmetry to be well defined. You might want to look for the generic measure for the multiples, right? So that's what we are trying to do. So before getting there, I would like to summarize what's missing about the multipoles compared to the dipole case. So first of all, we are missing the generic momentum space measure, even for the free fermions for the multipoles. Okay? It's different from the polarization case, where you have Px to be a very phase integral, which works even for the case without the symmetries. But it looks like we do not have such definitions for the multipoles. And the second, we do not have a generic midbody or real space measure for the multipoles, meaning that we do not have analogous expressions for these for the multipoles. And we do not have, of course, null relations because we do not have them. Okay? These are the missing pieces compared to the polarizations. Any questions?
Can you explain the Hermitian operator?
Yeah, that was quick, yes. So this one. So what you are looking at in this system is not. So what you are looking at is the you are looking at the very phase of this Hamiltonian. It's not directly the very phase of the block wave functions, but you are looking at the structures of the block wave functions, and like by defining the Wilson line operator. And then you look at more details.
So H of K is the...
Yeah, for example, yeah, if you wish. It's just Hermitian matrix, yeah, which turns out to be equivalent to the edge Hamiltonian, physical edge Hamiltonian. Yeah, adiabatically. Yeah, I can go through more detail after the talk, yeah. But for now, I would like to make sure that you see that this nested Wilson loop does not measure the multipolar moment generically. It's a band index, not a measure. Yeah. So in the following, what we are going to do is we solve this part. Okay. So that's our progress. So in short, we are going to look for the generic definitions of the electric multipoles in the crystals. So let's go on. So we propose that so this is the main result. So we essentially propose that the quadrupole moment in a crystal or octopole in a crystal must be defined in the way that I prepare the ground states. We are going to relax this later, but we prepare the ground states on the torus, meaning that it's periodic boundary conditions. And I consider the many-body states and take the expectation values against some unitary operators. The unitary operators has the summing over xy, and this is x, y, sorry. And xyz with the number x, y, z. And you are looking at the phase of these unitary operators, OK? So essentially, when you measure the unitary operators, it has modulus part and the phase part. And we are claiming the phase part are the physical bulk multipole moments. Any questions? So these are pretty simple, right? So let me show you the data first before claiming why it's the case. So what I'm going to show you is that I perform the explicit computations on my computer over the unitary operators and take the expectation values and look at the phase. And then I on the models in the literature, which is known to support the quadruple moment, and then ask if our measure defined this way gives you the half for the topological state, and the trivial state is zero. Yeah.
Are there other components like
QXX? Yeah, you can generalize that. Yeah, but we are restricting for now here to the XY component. Yeah, you can generalize to X square minus Y square. But let's say I consider the model which has on QXY. Yeah, and one thing I would like to say is that when you define this way, the mode one comes very naturally. The reason is that you are looking at the phase of the unitary operator, and the phase is defined in mode 2 pi, right? So mode 2 pi naturally gives you mode 1 for this Q. So let's see if that works. So for that, we go back to the model, the original model, where you have a Hopping parameter, lambda x, gamma x, gamma y, lambda y. So lambda x, lambda y are the inter-site unit cell hopping, and the gamma x, gamma y are intra-unit cell hopping. And what's known is that when the intra-unit cell hopping is set to be 1, this is the phase diagram. So these are the inter-site hoppings. And when they are bigger than 1, you have a trivial phase, meaning that qxy is 0 for these regions, and qxy is half for these blue regions. And let's say I compute the expectation of the unitary operator along this parameter line or this parameter line. Okay, and then let's see if I get the reasonable answers. So this is along the cut, this red one. And this is the phase of the unitary operator. And this is the parameter I'm changing. And the parameter changing going through 0 to 2. So you see, you have 0.5 here. It goes to 0.5 and jump to the 0. Exactly at 1, which is the point where you have phase transition. Yeah?
So for this model and other free fermion models,
yeah,
is your invariant reduced to some nice, I don't know, block wave function formula?
Nice functions?
I mean, if you plug in like a Slater determinant,
yeah,
for your ground state,
yeah, it doesn't give you. No, it doesn't. Yeah, we tried, but I failed to get any reasonable expressions. Yeah, I can show you the detail later, but yeah.
But does that agree with the band index that previous people found?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't connect with them. That's another question.
Numerically,
they are same, but analytically, I couldn't show they are same. One issue related to that and Tim's question is that if you plug this operator to the Slater determinant, you see this one completely remove the translation symmetry, x times y. So momentum basis seems pretty bad to factorize this one in a nice way. So it stops me to connect with the known nested Wiesner formula or any nice formula for the band index. Any other questions?
So does the ball gap close at the boundary?
This one, so along this line, you close the bulk gap. But this one, you don't. So it's a very pretty subtle phase transition. You do not close the Burke energy gap, but instead you close a Wilson loop spectrum gap. That's something I'm going to come back. So yeah, this one does not close the energy gap. Yeah. So one confidence from about our formula is that our invariant captures this subtle phase transition too, which does not close the Burke energy gap. So for example, if I follow this line, the multiple moment comes from 0.5 and then jumps to the 0 at 1.
Sorry, yeah. The yellow line.
Yeah.
Is it clear that it's a sharp transition?
What do you mean by sharp?
I mean, okay, can I explain something?
it's a sharp transition. So because you have reflection symmetries, so you
so it's still quantized.
Yeah, it's still quantized. Yeah. Yeah. Any other question? But anyway, the key point is that it correctly measures the transitions. Yeah, quantized values. So let's jump to another case.
Sorry,
yeah.
You said bulk gap doesn't close, but does the gap on the 1v9 close?
You mean on the open boundary conditions?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the open boundary conditions, yes. But we are dealing with the closed boundary conditions. So I do not have any open boundary here. Yeah. If you wish, you can interpret it as a boundary transition, but yeah. But it's a bulk quantity. So, I didn't measure. I do not know about the entanglement spectrum. Yeah, probably yeah, but yeah. So, the next example is the a model from this paper, anomalous high-order topological insulators, and what they claim is that they found a quantized bulk quadrupole moment. They found a model which has a quantized quadrupole moment and the fractional corner charge and the boundary polarizations, but a vanishing nested Wilson-Loeb index, which is the index from the original paper. And even though the naive application with nested Wilson-Loeb index approach fails, our invariance, which is the phase of the unitary operator, can diagnose the phase transitions very nicely. So you have actually, so there is some parameter in this model, which is expected to have phase transitions at one, and our unitary operators can measure the transitions. Okay, so it looks like the approach seems working. So far, what we get is we have constant answers with the nested Wilson-Loeb indices when you have symmetries. But the next order question is, can I go beyond the nested Wilson-Loeb approaches? For example, the case where the quantizing symmetries are relaxed so that the quadrupole moment can get away from half or zero. Okay? So for that, I would like to remind the simple physics that when you have a physical quadrupolar moment in the insulator, let's say I have a unit cell. Per unit cell, I have some quadrupole moment, which is Q. Then this one must be the same as the corner charge when you have open boundary conditions. The reason is that for the quadrupole moment to be Q, you can think of it as the unit cell where the charges are displaced in like plus Q, minus Q, minus Q. Okay? And then when there is a translation symmetry, you uniformly stack them. Then when you uniformly stack them, you see that minus Q plus Q cancels inside. But on the corners, you have plus Q, minus Q, plus Q, minus Q. So you see there will be some charges which is constant with the quadrupole moment in the bulk. So what we are going to do is we compare two completely independent calculations. One is on the periodic boundary conditions on the torus, which is the measure of the U2, and look at the phase of that. And then I compare that with the open boundary condition calculations. So you have the same Hamiltonian, and then putting on the open boundary conditions, and you do the single body observables, which is the charge densities localized at the corners. Okay? And I would like to mention that this is truly the many body calculation. So to compute this object, you need the full knowledge of the many body ground state. But this one is more like the single body observables because you are summing over the charge densities. Okay? And we are asking if this calculation and this calculation agree. Okay. And this is the result. So blue, which you do not see because it overlaps too nicely with the open boundary condition calculation. So U2, which is a closed boundary condition and the open boundary condition calculation, they completely agree. Okay? Even though the nested Wilson-Loeb measure, which is red, they disagree generally. So far, it looks like it's working.
Have you tried injecting non-state detections?
We are thinking to do that. We didn't try yet. Yeah, that's the next thing we are trying to do. Yeah.
Is there a guarantee they are real or expected?
That's this question, right? So that's something I'm going to answer. Yeah. Any other question? Maybe it's too trivial. Anyway, let me go on. So what we ask next is, why does this formula work? So far, what I presented is more like the numerical exponent. So we would like to ask why it works. And for that, we need the path integral interpretation of this overlap, okay? Which is the unitary operators sandwiched by the ground state. And this one, actually, if you use the Dyson's formula from your field theory textbook, which is like equation 1 or 2, something like that, this one can be written as 1 over z, which is partition function trace over something, where the beta goes to the infinity, right? And this one, I'm going to show that it's actually the same as the effective action, effective electromagnetism response of this ground state, okay? How do I say that? So we need to interpret this object, okay? So when you see this object, what you see is that the trace is like the overlap by the states, right? So what you do is you insert a state at time equal to 0, and you encounter the U2, okay? Because if you plug the state, it first see the unitary operator and see the beta h next. And this e to the beta h is the time evolutions. So what you see is that this one is nothing but the plug of the unitary operator at time equal to 0 and perform the time evolutions. And when you see this U2 as a exponential of something in these expressions, you see this one is nothing but plugging the gauge field. The reason is that if you look at this U2, you are generating the phase, which is proportional to the number. And that's nothing but the gauge potential does, right? So what you see is that, this one insert the gauge field configuration to the theory, which is only acting at time equal to 0, so you have delta t. And it's gauge potential, to, so you have mu to be component 0, and the phase, which is the xy divided by lx, ly. And you are evolving the state under the gauge field configuration. So the expectation value must be effective action with respect to the gauge field. Any question?
Does that correspond to linearly blown electric field?
It's an electric field only living at that time equal to 0 space.
But
yeah.
Spatially.
It's growing along. Yeah, but it's a finite. Everything is well defined in the finite size system. Yeah. So the question, next question is, what is S effective? Okay. So this is pretty simple. So for example, for the charge, S effective is nothing but charge times the potential, right? And the polarization, we know that effective is the polarization density times the electric field, okay? And for the quadrupole moment, where the charges are displaced this way, gives you actually the quadrupole moment times dxey plus dyex, okay? So if you plug that, the effective action with this gauge field configuration, then you immediately notice that this one picks up the coefficient in the quadrupole moment density, which is that. So if you plug EY and EX, which is dictated by this gauge field configuration, then you pick up this value. And we know that this is agree with the corner charge. So that's why the expectation variable U2 measures the bulk quadrupole moment. Good. Any question? And in fact, you see, U2 does not need to take the particular form, but it can be arbitrary unitary operator, which saturates the effective action to be QXY, which saturates the S effective to be 2 pi, okay? So actually, you can choose any arbitrary unitary operator to measure the quadrupole moment as far as this effective action value gives you that value. So for example, using that, I can generalize our unitary to take the like LX, LY, which is smaller than the full system size. And if you plot that, you actually get this expectation matrix. And actually, this formula further does not require you to be in the closed boundary condition, but open boundary condition is also okay. So actually, we can prepare the states with the open boundary condition and act these unitary operators. That's the prediction from the field theory. And then you can do the numerics. And then you can show that these are the system size which is like 14, prepared in the periodic boundary conditions and open boundary conditions. And they tend to disagree a little bit. But if you go to the bigger system and bigger system, they tend to collapse each other, which agrees with the corner charge in the open boundary condition calculations. And this analogy can be generalized to the polarizations. And then even for the polarizations, you don't need the full Restas formula, but you can deviate from that. And then that also works. And they tend to collapse with the edge charge in the bigger system. So in short, we essentially found the generic definitions of the electric multiples in the crystals. OK? Any questions?
So what's stopping you from interpreting the operator U2 and just like replace X with DKX and Y with DKY and so on?
It's tempting to replace that way, but it's not working.
It doesn't work.
It does not work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because if we can do that, then it's just a very curvature, right?
No. Actually, even if you do that, it's not very curvature. It's called something like a quantum metric, which is the second moment of the block wave functions, which measures something else. Yeah. But anyway, any other questions? So far, we have concentrated on the phase part, but I have some remark about the modulus part. So far, we have talked about the phase part of the unitaries, but modulus also measures something. So what's that? So what's known is that for the U1, which is polarization, there is a known conjecture from Resta. So what he says is that the Px, which was phase of the unitary, is defined in the metal because the polarization will be screened by the charges, right? So in the metal, polarization is defined. And the way to make the polarization defined is that the amplitude part must go to zero, OK? As you have a spectral gap to be zero. Okay, so that's the Restas conjecture, which seems working in the known examples. And from this, we can actually generalize further, which seems to be working for the examples we considered. So what we conjecture is that this operator, the modulus part, where it goes to zero, as the Wilson loop spectral gap that I'm going to discuss soon goes to zero. And this does not require the Burke energy gap to close. So this one, the modulus part, measures something else than the Burke energy gap, which is charge gap. But it seems to suggest that I can have a dipolar metal, dipolar degrees freedoms, which becomes metallic, so that it screens out the quadrupole moment. But the charge sector remains insulator. So what I'm going to compare is that I'm going to compare the modulus part and look at the Wilson loop spectrums, which has the gap. So we look at the gap and how the modulus scale each other. and this is the result. So we follow the parameter region where the energy gap remains the same, but the Fourier wisdom loop spectrum gap closes like that. And then we compare with the amplitude part, which actually shows the nice scaling relation with these wisdom loop spectral gaps. So we speculate this one as the high order generalization of the like kind of Restas conjecture, where the U2 modulus becomes zero as you have the wisdom loop gap spectrum goes to zero, which seems to suggest you have kind of like that polynomial. So in short, we found the generic definitions of the electromultipoles in CRISTAR, which is the phase part of the unitary, but also kind of like many body measures for the wisdom loop spectrum gap closings, which is defined from the band indice, which is measured by the modulus of the unitary.
So is there any Cantor's extension?
No. Yeah, so why I, that's why I... I
so all of the decay.
Yeah, correct. So
I have a boundary.
You have a boundary transitions, yeah, yeah. But we are playing with the closed boundary conditions, so yeah.
Maybe a dumb question. So if I let's say define the quantum moment by the corner charge
mm-hmm.
over boundary conditions, say I have this square.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I can imagine doing is to stack some wires of ACC.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then that presumably I can swap the corner charge,
mm-hmm.
Which probably means I change my overall quadrupole moment.
You are changing the edge part of the quadrupole moment. The corner charge is one consequence of the bulk quadrupole moment, right?
Right. So, but the if I only care about the overall.
Yeah. Then you are right. Yeah. Yeah.
That cannot be detected by any bulking variable.
No. No, it's purely edge phenomena, right?
Right, yeah, it's purely edge phenomena.
So for me, the quadrupole moment is the bulk quantity, which appears as the coefficient of the response function.
So it's not measured through the...
It can be measured through the edge charge.
But then how could it be meaningful?
That's one measure,
right.
One consequence.
Uh-huh.
But it's not everything, right? I mean,
okay.
Yeah. So one consequence of that. Yeah. But you can the thing you're trying to do is not good for measuring that. On the other way of saying that is to measure this one through the corner charge, you'd like to have a very nice boundary condition. You are truncating the bulk Hamiltonian literally at the boundary.
Okay.
Yeah.
But can you do that by half integer?
Half integer. So it depends on the symmetries.
So
without symmetries, you can dress whatever you have on. Yeah. You can dress any polarization on the boundaries.
So the non-trivial state is characterized by half, right?
When you have a symmetries, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The question is whether you can remove it by just adding something on the corner.
Yeah, something on the corners. I think you can do that if you do not have the symmetries. If you have a symmetries there, depending on the symmetries,
yeah.
sometimes you cannot do that.
You
yeah, let's say I have a C4, then you cannot do that.
Right.
Yeah. You cannot remove that, yeah. Yeah, C4 is very strong, yeah. Yeah. Any other question? Yeah.
You might have mentioned this earlier, but so what's the like linear response interpretation of your inheritor?
Interpretation with linear response?
Well, like when you know about the Schur number, you can think of
How
some, like similar
expression for that?
Well, some similar interpretation of your invariant as some response.
So this is the response of the quadrupole insulator, linear response, right? Like that.
So I guess
Team Project
can you do a
Kubo formula for this? I didn't try. But presumably that should appear here, yeah. But I didn't try to calculate it through the Kubo formula. Yeah. That's one thing you might want to that's one thing I want to try next. Yeah. So this is the physically motivated response, but I didn't derive it. Yeah. Any other question? Okay. So far, what we have shown you is that we have found some generic many-body real space invariant for the multipoles. But we are still missing one S3. So let's finish by conclusions and outlooks. So in conclusions, we have proposed the definitions for the many-body measure of the multipoles, and we measure them through the numerical computations too, and we provided the analytic supports from the effective field theory. And the outlook is that, as Songshik suggested, we are trying to play with the interacting systems too, and trying to apply the same formula to the bosonic high-order topological insulators. And it would be nice to find the momentum space measure for the many-body invariants. And lastly, we think it could be interesting to relate our unitary operator with the Liebeschert-Matisse type theorems. If you remember the polarizations, the unitary operator has very very important role in deriving the Liebeschert-Matisse theorem. So probably our unitary operator may also have the similar theorems. So thank you for your attention. That's just electromagnetic gauge field. Yeah. So if you wish, it's U1, but.
So it's U1?
Yeah. It's classical electromagnetics.
Okay. So back to this this example, the transition to yellow line. So are you saying that the QXY is still quantized?
Yes, mirror symmetry.
You have only one mirror, right?
Yes, two mirrors. You have two mirrors.
Two mirrors, you
automatically
have C4.
MX, MY.
Oh, sorry, you only have C2. Sorry.
Yeah.
C2.
So if you have this mirror, then you have a C4, but these mirrors do not give you the C4, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're saying the quantization is guaranteed by
mirrors.
Both mirror or just one mirror?
You can use only one mirror to get the quantization conditions. Yes.
I see. But you're saying the transition doesn't come with any gap closing?
No. So physical edge gap does not close, but the Wiesner gap closes and open. I can show you the detail. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe mysterious if you are sitting at the critical point for correlation function decays
exponentially.
Somehow
quadrupole moment can be screened out. That's how I
somehow your entanglement has some
gaplessness.
Yeah, some kind of long range.
You can say that. Yeah.
So at the critical point, presumably, like,
have
an open boundary condition.
And then edge side is metallic.
Edge is guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Otherwise, I can always.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. In one boundary condition, you can explicitly show it closes gap, but I didn't try every boundary conditions.
Okay.
But presumably you are right. It should be gapless to screen out the quadruple moment, yes.
Just get closing the entanglement.
Yeah, yeah.
But all the thermodynamic quantities goes smoothly.
I didn't calculate every thermodynamic quantity, but from the experience, the energy gap remains the finite, means everything is, yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to be careful, yeah. In the statement, anyway.
Are you sure that there's no other path that smoothly deforms? Because it's
quantized.
Yeah.
This is kind of similar to the story of third order phase transitions by Gross and Witten, right?
Third order phase transition, okay.
Yeah, basically, there was a point of hope in that case, which was the only thing that was detecting a phase transition. There was no closing or anything, right? You can see this is really not any of third order of CFTs.
Mm-hmm.
That's an average theory, but the point is you have to look at some fancy Wilson loop to see
phase
transition in its eigenvalues.
I see.
Without actually seeing any gap closing or anything like that.
I see. I didn't know that. Yeah, but sounds very similar to what's going on. Yeah.
When I phrase it like this, it sounds similar, but everything else. So,
I see. Good to know. Other questions?
So let's thank Phil and Julia on next week. So.